Hello and welcome to Nightcap with Jim. I'm the titular Jim, and tonight we have a pretty big, packed episode for you. We'll be doing some Jim Goes to the Movies quick reviews. I will be doing the first part of what I'm going to be doing for the rest of the year while I focus on other stuff like streaming and things like that for Mangami. And last night I went and saw Joker, so we're going to be talking about that in depth. I will have a non-spoiler and spoiler segment for that film, which is going to be pretty exciting. All right. For more content you may enjoy, please check out our Morning Mangami podcast and our other social media content at Mangami Players all across the different social medias. All right, let's get into it. All right, before we begin, I just wanted to really quick take a minute to say apologies for the unexpected hiatus that we experienced here. As we like to misquote Dr. Ian Malcolm from Jurassic Park around here, life gets in the way. So, you know, just stuff happened. My bad. I got a plan now. We're back and we got some stuff. So basically what I'm going to be doing is this is going to be like the last episode of the year. For the rest of the year, every Saturday, I'm going to be doing what I threatened to do last year, which was just review week by week those three TV shows that I love so much. The Rookie, SWAT, and SEAL Team, which are the only three shows that I watch week to week. So that's what's going to be the Nightcap with Jim podcast for just the rest of this year. And then once we get to the new year, we're going to pick back up and start doing the stuff that you're used to again. Let's dive into it. All right, so let's kick off this episode with our quick reviews, the Jim Goes to the Movie quick reviews. Now, I decided to do these as quick reviews because, one, sometimes passed since I've seen some of these movies, and two, three of four of them are sequels, and as you know, I like to, when a movie's got multiple entries in a franchise, I like to put that all in the same episode. So, we're going to start with Angel Has Fallen, and by the way, I'm doing these in the order that I saw them. So Angel Has Fallen. If you don't know, it's the third of the Has Fallen or the Fallen franchise, beginning with Olympus Has Fallen, continuing on with London Has Fallen, and potentially ending with Angel Has Fallen. Angel, referring to Gerard Butler's character, Secret Service agent Mike Banning, who in the universe of the film Secret Service agents go by codename Angel. So this, I think, is my favorite, easily my favorite film of the franchise. It just ratchets up everything that you come to expect from these movies, and gives you a lot of new stuff as well. Like, the music is one of my favorite things about the movie. It's this very restrained score that's not your typical bombastic, in-your-face kind of action score, which is absolutely incredible. There's a sequence about halfway into the movie with a semi-truck that is just, the only word I've been able to figure out to describe it is sublime, and it's absolutely extraordinary. Every action sequence is just magnificent, you know what I mean? And they're all different from each other. Like, there's no two action sequences that are like another one. They're all their own unique set piece, and they build off of each other towards the climactic event in the third act of the film, and I just absolutely adored it. It was absolutely incredible. The only complaint I have about this movie is just one particular shot where there's a very large explosion that goes off towards the end of the movie, and there's just a not-so-awesome special effect shot, which I imagine was just a pickup that they did on green screen, so they didn't have the set, they didn't have the location, and so on and so forth. I'm just guessing about the reason why that the shot is the way it is, but luckily though, the rest of the movie is so good that that didn't take me out of it, and even with that one little shot, like, I would still give this like a 10 out of 10. So absolutely incredible. Gerard Butler kicks ass. Morgan Freeman was great. Just the story, the action, the music, the cinematography, everything was absolutely fantastic, and I loved it. All right, next up on the hit parade of quick reviews, we have It Chapter 2. Now, you guys know I'm not a huge horror movie guy, but I have to say, I really am digging on these It movies. I just love the idea, the story. I do remember, reading the book a little bit and watching the original miniseries that they did with like John Ritter and Molly Ringwald and stuff. Which I thought was okay, and Tim Curry was pretty cool as Pennywise, but gotta tell you, Bill Skarsgård just absolutely kills this killer clown character just 100%. It's absolutely just it's absolutely just it was just really great filmmaking. You know what I mean? And the adult cast is just absolutely spectacularly fantastic. I mean, James McAvoy, as always, killing it. Jessica Chastain, as always, killing it. And everybody else, I don't remember some of the guys' names, but James Ransone, who plays the adult Eddie, he is just wonderful. He's an absolutely fantastic actor. I love him to death. He's so great. You might recognize him from stuff like In a Valley of Violence, or season 2 of The Wire, stuff like that. And he's just a really great actor. But I think the standout performance of this movie for me was Bill Hader. And Bill Hader just owns this movie. Like, he is the king. Like, his he, you know, if you know who Bill Hader is, you know he doesn't do this kind of stuff. He doesn't do drama, he doesn't do horror, he doesn't do action stuff. He's a comedy guy. But it's like Joss Whedon likes to say, if you can make somebody laugh, you can probably make somebody cry. And Bill Hader has that in spades. Like, his performance is just magnificent. And I can't really say enough good things about Bill Hader in this movie because he is just wonderful. The effects are great. Like, I really like was kind of creeped out by some stuff. Like, it's it it you know Because, like, I get, because, I've said it multiple times, I get really, really into the stuff that I'm watching, and that's why I try not to watch too many horror movies, because I usually end up getting scared shitless if it's a really good movie, like that movie, like this movie Hereditary. But anyway, like, this one was just fantastic. It's really interesting to see a movie like this because it's a horror movie epic. It's an epic movie. And what I mean by that is the genre of epic. Like the sword and sandals stuff, like Gladiator and whatnot. It's that, but just a horror movie, and to do that takes a lot of guts and a lot of really smart planning and well thought out stuff, and you have to have a director and a writer and a cast and crew that is just on point, and that is what It Chapter 2 is. Absolutely fantastic filmmaking, and I loved it. I'm going to give it, though, like a 9 out of 10. Go with 9 out of 10 on that. So this next review, I have two movies, and the reason I'm putting two in one segment here is because I did a double feature day. And you might think I'm a little weird because of the two films I decided to watch back to back. So I went with Rambo 5, otherwise known as Rambo Last Blood, and the Brad Pitt sci-fi film Ad Astra. I just really wanted to see them, and I had like one day to do it, so I just went and saw them both. And actually, it ended up being a really good double feature day, which sounds really weird, but the films are connected in the strangest of ways, which is absolutely hilarious. But anyway, Rambo. I'm a huge fan of Sylvester Stallone, particularly Rocky and Rambo. I'm sure there might be some people who are like, "Ugh, come on, dude. Like, why can't your favorite stuff be, some of his off-color thing or whatever?" 'Cause it's basically like saying that, Stairway to Heaven is your favorite Led Zeppelin song in a way, which, is fair enough, but it's like Led Zeppelin has a lot of other really good songs, and same thing with Sly. He's got a lot of it. I mean, but Rocky and Rambo, I just don't think there's anything that quite compares to those two characters, the work he's put in, especially because he's been doing them for over 3 decades. And Rambo, I think, is just wholly underrated, especially once you get to the third movie. Then it's just kind of like, eh, I don't know about this. But I genuinely enjoy all these movies, you know? Hands down, the first one would be the best. Rambo Last Blood, I would say second best of the franchise. It's absolutely fantastic. The reason I think it's the second best, and just a little bit behind First Blood, is because they're very similar movies in that they're personal conflicts within Rambo. Whereas, you know, the second movie, it's a get-out-of-jail-free card, the mission that he goes on. And then in the third movie, it's, you know, he's kind of, it's an obligation as opposed to, you know, him wanting to do something. Because it's his colonel, the guy who made him into a killing machine, has been, you know, taken prisoner. So he's like, oh, I gotta go rescue this freaking guy. And the fourth movie is like the Soldier of Fortune minus the fortune. Like, you know, you know, just like a crusader of justice, if you will, that he turns into in the second half of the movie. Whereas the first one, it's, you know, these cops that are just total jerks to him, and he ends up having a, you know, crazy torture scene flashback that, you know, just puts him into escape and evade mode. And this one is super, super personal because it's his niece that gets kidnapped and sold into the sex slave ring. So it just comes back to this really personal space for Rambo where it's not, you know, like outside forces, you know, outside agencies or entities that, you know, require its help. It's something from within, you know, his personal space in his life, with, you know, his niece. So it just becomes this much more intense and personal fight than we've ever seen in a Rambo film, which totally changes the dynamic of the action and the violence, which was absolutely incredible. And the way that it ends, the, like, I like, almost audibly said out loud, "No, you did not just do that." But it was awesome. All right. So, yeah, after that, I went and chilled out for a second, and then I went right in. It was like a 10-minute break, and then right into Ad Astra with Brad Pitt, directed by James Gray. And I loved this movie, man. It was so good. Like, you know, this is not the kind of movie I would have thought that James Gray would make. James Gray, you know, you'll know him from stuff like The Immigrant with Joaquin Phoenix and stuff like We Own the Night with Mark Wahlberg and Joaquin Phoenix. But, you know, like, he does these much more, like, grounded, literally grounded, like, on Earth, on Earth, you know, much more grounded, gritty, character-driven movies that, you know, they're just, it's just nothing like what you see in Ad Astra. And the great thing is that you can still see, like, his style of a filmmaker, but it's just, like, blown up. You know what I mean? Like, he turned the dial up to 12. And there's just this crazy, you know, the scale of the movie is absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, we start on Earth and we end up out by Neptune. You know what I mean? And it's absolutely bonkers good. I mean, Brad Pitt is just extraordinary. But this movie, like, he just, again, he, like, turned the dial up. You know what I mean? Like, and he just brought it. One of my favorite little bits of the movie is that when they start briefing him on the mission to go out into space, they ask him this question, and they're like, "So we were reading your file, and it says here that your heart rate has never exceeded 87 beats per minute, even during the most stressful situations." And he's like, "Yeah, just able to keep cool." And I'm just like, "What?" Because, I mean, the movie opens up with a pretty spectacular and thrilling sequence involving his character where anybody else would be like, you know, like, it would sound like your heart's like a machine gun, just like, just, you know, like 3,000 beats per second. But this guy's just able to be like, nope. And it's just so cool, like one of the coolest little character tidbits, like character traits I've ever heard in a movie. Just absolutely spectacular. The actual like space stuff like is so well done, it's insane. From the trailer you might have seen there's like a rover chase with like ro with rover like the cars that they took to the moon, and you know stuff like just every seat every it's just so damn good, man. Absolutely incredible, so well done. Can't wait to see it again. All right, so that's gonna do it for the quick reviews. And we're gonna be back to talk about some TV shows, and we're gonna talk about Joker. So stay tuned. All right, here we go, guys. The big one of this particular episode, Joker. So I'm gonna break this down into two segments. I'm gonna do what I usually do with the Jim Goes to the Movies stuff, which is just gonna give you the feels of it, just give you my vibe on it, and then I'm gonna go into spoiler mode in the next segment. So I'm gonna warn you again, probably like five times. So, but anyway, non-spoiler segment. Here we go. Holy bleep! this movie is crazy. Like, it's bonkers. It is simultaneously exactly what I expected, and at the same time, contradictingly, not what I expected at all. So, like, I did not see anything coming. But it's exactly what I figured it was gonna be, if that makes any sense. Like, I know that doesn't make sense, but that's the only way I can, like, it couldn't be anything else than what it is. And the way I saw it in my, like, the way I was picturing it, how it was gonna go, was exactly like this, but I didn't know that this was what was gonna be it is now. Okay. Whatever. Enough of the tautology or whatever that is. Just the nonsense coming out of my brain. It was incredible. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix is he's amazing, you know. The thing I love about this particular incarnation of Joker is the reason we have, there's an actual legitimate reason why he laughs the way he laughs. And it's an actual medical condition that causes people to laugh regardless of how their emotional, what emotional state that they're in. You know, so like the first time we hear him laugh, it's the scene from the trailer where he's on this bus and he's, you know, making faces, you know, being silly with his kid and his mom turns around and is like, "Can you leave my kid alone?" Like, he's just a really fragile person, this character, Arthur Fleck. And so, like, it makes him want to cry, this reaction that this woman has to him just being silly and goofy and making, you know, a little kid laugh, which is his job. He's a clown. You know, he gets literally, his job is to make people, specifically kids, laugh by being a silly goofball. So, and it's because he's so fragile, he takes it really bad, and so he starts and you know, and the lady's like, "What the hell is wrong with you, dude? Like, you think this is funny?" And he, like, you know, he pulls out his little medical card, you know, like some people have for other types of disorders and stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, "Please excuse my laughter. I don't actually think something's funny. It's just I have a condition, blah, blah, blah." So, like, there's a legitimate medical, psychological reason why he laughs the way he does, and when he does, when it's completely inappropriate for him to laugh, but also why, like the laugh that he has that's so, like, twisted and, you know, that sounds so, like, crazy. Like, there's a reason for it, and that's awesome. because the Joker has always been shrouded in mystery. Like, we never know who he is and what he is, with a few exceptions, but even then, there's still so much mystery surrounding, like, even characters like this Joker, or, like Jack Nicholson's, where we know the guy's name before he goes into the vat of acid. We know what he did for a living. We've got a pretty good section of his life where we understand exactly what's going on with the guy, but still, there's so much mystery surrounding him. Especially post transformation into the Joker. So it's just like, even if you know every single bit of this character, his like origin pre transformation, once he becomes the Joker, he becomes a complete mystery, which is just so crazy, because like it's literally like, instead of a sex change, it's a person change. Like, just you had one person, and then this moment happens, and now that person is not here anymore, and now we have the Joker, and that's it. So it's just so then that's why I've always been fascinated by the Joker, and I'm sure all of us are. And why he's probably the most famous villain of any comic book canon, and why we all like him and love him so much, even though we really shouldn't, because he's a pretty crazy guy. But this movie just was amazing. I mean, Todd Phillips sublimely directed this to perfection, I think. I don't think there's anything that could have made the film better than it was, with the one exception of, I read something, I'm not sure, because I'm not sure if this is true or not, but that they went to Viggo Mortensen and wanted him to play Thomas Wayne, and that's the only thing I could think that would make this movie better, and even then, it wouldn't make it like that much better. I mean, Brett Cullen did a really, really good job. He did a really great job as Thomas Wayne. So like Viggo being there would just have made it like okay, it would have been a lot better, I'm a huge Viggo Mortensen fan, but I love Brett Cullen too, so don't get me wrong, like the guy did a fantastic job. But it's like, if I can see Viggo in something, I want to see Viggo in something, but yeah, this movie was just absolutely so crazy, but so well done. And it's really weird. It really got to me, this movie. I've been finding these movies recently that have really been affecting me, like my mood and how I'm thinking about stuff. And this is one of those movies that just really, like, I just was having, on the drive home from the theater. And for about a half an hour to an hour after I got home, I just had these crazy dark thoughts, like just really dark stuff, like I was really identifying, not identifying, I guess I should say empathizing. I was really empathetic to Arthur Fleck's trials and tribulations and troubles that he's experiencing. I felt for the guy. I felt bad for the guy. So when he starts transforming into Joker, I started feeling, I started rooting for it a little bit, I was like, it felt good, which is really, really weird. Like, I'm not some kind of crazy person, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't endorse anything that Arthur Fleck Joker did in this movie. But it just made me feel better to see him doing better, you know what I mean? And because of, my past relationship with this character of Joker, because I like the Joker, I think he's a great character, you know what I mean? And to see an actual transformation, and to see the full spiel where we see him before he puts the makeup on and becomes this crazy psychotic clown prince of crime, and to see him after that, where he's just like fully embraced that, what I mean, Joaquin Phoenix and them would, like, he calls it for lack of a better word, the light, like the joy inside of him, as opposed to the darkness. Or I might be misquoting him a little bit there. That might have been something else he was talking about. But either way, like, it works. You know, like, I don't see the Joker being this dark part of Arthur Fleck's personality. I see it more as the light coming out, because he's just so much happier. And he's actually only happy once he starts going down this road. Like, he's not happy ever. And he even says it in the movie. He's like, I've never been happy in my entire life. So, it's just really weird. Like, but it definitely got to me, this movie. Like I said, I was having some really dark thoughts in my head. Just like, I don't know what's going on. And my mood, I was just like, really, just like, I was really brooding, you know? And it was really, really intense. Like, this movie definitely got to me. So, you know, it was all good, though. Like, I mean, I'm very good at being able to turn that stuff off. Like, I just watched a couple episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I was fine. You know what I mean? like it's like I say with either my friends and stuff like that. Movies and TV shows and video games and stuff, like, they're my cheat code. Like, if I feel sad or if I feel angry, if I feel, you know, any sort of negative emotion or thought, if I just put on something I like, then I'm fine. You know what I mean? I watch a little stand-up comedy, no problem. Play a little bit of a video game, you know, maybe play some Grand Theft Auto, you know, blow a bunch of stuff up, or, you know, something a little bit more tame, you know, like a baseball game or, you know, something like that. I'm fine. You know, put on some Brooklyn Nine-Nine, put on some MASH, put on whatever, and I'm good. So it's interesting the way that my mind works. I know not everybody's like that. So, I definitely want to warn you before you go see this movie, just check yourself before you wreck yourself, because if you really, really get into movies like I do, and, if you're just a kind soul who's empathetic towards people, you might find yourself, experiencing the same thing that I did, which was, you know, just, you know, feeling this level of empathy towards this guy who, you know, it's not like it's all these outside forces just hammering on him day after day after day after day, just trying to break him down, and out of it comes Joker. So, all right, I'll be back in a second, and we're going to get into some spoiler stuff. Actually, you know what? Nah. So, never mind. I'm not going to do a spoiler segment. I just decided. I've said everything I want to say right now about Joker. I don't feel I need to say anymore, so... never mind. No spoiler segment. We're just going to move right on to the TV shows, and you're going to see what the rest of the year is going to look like for the Nightcap with Jim podcast. And, yeah. Go see Joker. Just be careful, because it's super crazy and super dark. It's awesome, though. And, wow. You know? I'm really happy. You know what? Just for a second, I'm going to reflect out loud, just talk to myself right now. You guys don't have to listen to this. But no, I'm really glad, because I was going to do spoilers, and you guys know I don't like doing spoiler stuff. And I thought I was going to have to, but I just don't. Like, I said literally everything right now that's in my head I want to say about the movie. I just said it. I don't need to say anymore. So, I'm really happy about that. All right, anyway, stay tuned. We'll be right back to talk about some TV shows. Okay, guys, like I said, from here on out, the rest of the episode is going to be what the Nightcap with Jim podcast is going to be for the next few months until the end of the year. And it's just going to be me for 5 or 10 minutes, roughly, just updating you, talking about doing a little bit of a review on, the three TV shows that the only TV shows that I watch week to week, every single week. And that would be The Rookie, which airs on Sunday nights, and SEAL Team and SWAT, which air back-to-back on CBS. The Rookie airs on ABC Sunday nights, 9:10 Central, Eastern Central Time, and SEAL Team and SWAT Central Time would be 8 and 9 p.m. respectively. So, let's jump into it with the season premiere of The Rookie. So, You guys know that I'm in love with this show. I think, and I still think, it's the best new show on TV right now. And that's saying a lot because it's been a pretty good couple of years for TV. I mean, with stuff like Yellowstone, SEAL Team and SWAT, and just all these other absolutely like Westworld and stuff like that. Just there's a lot of really great shows out there, but Rookie, I think, is my top pick for the new up and comer. It's just so well made, and this first episode just it shows me that these guys are locking into a groove, they're locking into a rhythm, and they're really gonna amp it up and go for it, just swing for the fences again. Now, the first episode is absolutely fantastic. I loved it to death. With one little thing. It's actually not a little thing, it's actually a really big frickin' thing. So one of the main cast members has left the show. And that is the actress Afton Williams, who plays Nathan Fillion's character, John Nolan's training officer. The reason that she left is a bunch of BS, a bunch of bull crap, aroon-ski doodle. I'm trying not to get really cursy right now because this makes me extremely angry. She suffered unwanted sexual advances and sexual harassment and other abuse, which she says was racially motivated, at the hands of one of her co-stars and one of the department heads of, I believe it was the makeup department. And she went to the showrunner with this. And months went by, and they called her up and were like, "Hey, we're about to start shooting season two." And she's like, "Well, what about that whole investigation thing into the sexual harassment and the abuse that I told you about, partner?" And apparently, nothing happened. Now, again, this is because there was no investigation for so long. And then when it was done, there was no evidence of wrongdoing found. Apparently, that's what the network says. I mean, I take that with a grain of salt. Like, if Afton Williams said that some shit went down, I tend to believe her. Like, she's not, from what I've understood about her through her career, she's not the kind of person to make some shit like this up. Especially not in this day and age, with where this is such a huge thing that is going on in our society right now, and all these, very prominent people are getting fucking busted for this stuff. So, and I think we're turning the corner as a culture and a society where we've gone from never believing a woman or a victim of this kind of stuff to, I mean, some people just very aggressively always siding with the alleged victim, just like there's no way that these people are lying anymore, like and then there's some people who are still cautious about, coming down on one side or the other. I'm not gonna do that, come down on either side. That's all I'm gonna say is, like, Afton Williams, I don't believe that she would lie about this kind of stuff. I don't want to believe that anybody would lie about this stuff. Especially not when, you're the showrunner or producer and you're being accused of not looking into allegations of harassment and abuse on your set. So, I don't know. That's all I'll say, but that is why Afton Williams left the show, and I'm extremely pissed off about it. And it bums me out, man. It just bums me out because she was absolutely incredible on the show. Her performances were always outstanding. And she's gonna be missed, other than that, the first episode went off without a hitch. It takes place, it kicks off literally immediately after the season finale of the f of last year's of last season's big crazy final episode of the season which involved some terroristic plot. So it kicks off with a bang, and it just keeps on going, man. Like the show just they found their rhythm. They found a really good thing that they got, and they're sticking to their guns. And I can't wait to see what the rest of the season looks like. Hopefully we won't have any more bummer news like Afton Williams leaving for the rest of the year, so it can all be, instead of me having to be bummed out while telling you about how awesome the show is, because some bullshit happened apparently. I can just be like, "Hey guys, new episode, it was awesome." So yeah. Little somber for episode one, just because one of my favorite characters left. They pulled an audible and they're able to somehow right the ship and keep it going, at least on screen wise. I don't know about on the set wise. We'll see what happens with that. But anyway, episode one, season two, fantastic. Make sure you tune in tomorrow night, Sunday night tomorrow, because season two continues with episode two, which I believe will be pretty doit. No, wait, not doit, toit. There we go. It'll be toit. It's gonna be toit. All right, stick around. I'll be right back, and we're gonna be talking about SEAL Team and SWAT. Alrighty, so now we come to SEAL Team. I've been saying about the I said about the show when I was talking about these three shows a few episodes back. I think these guys have like the best camera crew in TV right now. One of the best crews in the business, period. They're not letting me down, man. This season kicks off with some pretty intense stuff going down, and it's really cool. They takes place in Belgrade in Serbia, and the team actually went, the crew, the cast and the crew actually went to Serbia to film these first three episodes of season three, which is super exciting and super awesome. The fact that this show involves these types of characters who are globetrotters, and they have to, be anywhere in the world at a moment's notice. And the fact that they actually do a whole bunch of location shooting, just elevates the show to this, this higher place of just like, it's for real. SWAT does that too, which is great. I mean, they're LAPD, so obviously they're shooting on location in Los Angeles, but there was an episode in season two where where two of the characters had to go undercover in Mexico, and so they actually went and shot in Mexico. And I love that location shooting stuff, because it just, like I said, it elevates that stuff just to a higher plane. And SEAL Team is no exception. I mean, just everything about this show is so good. The performances, the cinematography, the music, the writing, the stories, everything is just so well done. And the great thing about season three, the way that it opens up, is that they've had 2 years, and those first two seasons were extremely action packed, but there was this vibe to them, this sort of frenetic, just very, edge of your seat, like immediacy to the stories and the action. And there's nothing different, really. Well, there it's a little different because they've had 2 years to really get good at this stuff. So now with season three, it just feels like it feels like the elder statesman, if you will. Like you had the punk rock kid and the metalhead phase, and then now it's like, okay, no, we know exactly what we're doing, and we can kind of calm down a little bit. We don't have to be so freaked out about what we're doing, because we know what's going, we know what the score is. And that's what it feels like. You know, it feels like the first season they were just like, you know, like not that they didn't know what they were doing, but it just had that vibe to it, that kind of kinetic, frenetic energy to it, where it's just like, you know, we got to figure some stuff out. And season two, they were like, okay, we're locking in, we're locking in, we're locking in. And then now it's like season three, it has this vibe of just like, bing, like the heat seeker is locked on and it's on its way. So we'll see as the season goes on whether that missile, that heat-seeking missile, connects with its target. But I just can't wait to see what they do with it because they got some really interesting character stuff going on. You know, one of the team members last season got blown up pretty good, and there was a possibility of him not coming back to operate. But he's back, and we'll see how his injury plays out. You know, we got a team member who, you know, he's a father, and his kids are, you know, out of the house, so he's on his own for the first time in a long time. You know, we got characters who are just, you know, like recovering from all this crazy stuff that happened in season two. Just like so much bonker stuff happened last year that, you know, these guys are, you know, a little bit frazzled from all the intense, crazy stuff that went on. So, but they're back, man. Like, they are back in fighting shape, and they are ready to kick some butt. And they don't waste any time in doing that, you know. And I can't wait to see what happens next, next Wednesday, because it seems like these first three episodes are very connected to each other. And you know, I mean, even the first two episodes, it's a part one and a part two. I don't know if episode three is part three or if it's, you know. But we got part one of part two, and I can't wait to see part two because it's going to be absolutely incredibly insane. I can just see with what they did with the first episode. So you're going to want to tune in next Wednesday to check out the newest episode of SEAL Team. If you don't have it, if you don't have a streaming service that has any of these shows that are coming out, like Hulu has The Rookie Season 2, and they drop the new episode. Seems like Monday morning, like early, like around 5 or 6 in the morning, something around there. But for Hulu anyway, you have to have like some special package version to get SEAL Team and SWAT. I don't know why they have the first two seasons, but they aren't doing season three uploads, it looks like anyway for now. So if you like these shows, what I recommend is what I'm doing, which is I just went on YouTube, or you could go on another streaming service and just buy the season digitally, so that every week you're gonna have a new episode lined up and ready to go. So you may not watch it the night of air, but you'll be able to watch it the next night, which is just as good. So definitely check these shows out, guys, because they're awesome. Especially if you like action stuff, if you like some really good high drama, if you're interested in the military, if you're interested in cop stuff, all that good stuff, really interesting character drama, really character-driven action and story, just really great stuff. So you're gonna want to not miss anything. We'll be right back to talk about SWAT. All right, now to end the episode, we are talking about the first episode of season three of SWAT. Really good episode, as per the usual. Really kind of exciting, but also a little bit thought-provoking. So the main focus is this: these guys are going on a raid after Hondo's come back from vacation with his foster kid that he's adopted, and they go on a raid. And while they're on the raid, a drone flies overhead that they think is surveillance, but then it goes to the beach, explodes, and kills a bunch of people. And so it's a serial bomber who's using drones. And the motivation behind using drones and stuff is because this guy is a service member who, you know, served in Afghanistan, fell in love, or not Afghanistan, not Afghanistan. It was somewhere else. I forget. it was kind of late last night when I got to it, Anyway, he was a service member. He fell in love with an indigenous personnel of whatever country he was in, and tried to, you know, get her over to America, and she got killed in a drone strike, so he's taking revenge. Very, very thought-provoking, if, you know, you allow yourself to think about it for a second, because it did, you know, like, obviously the guy went about the whole thing the wrong way. I mean, unless you condone revenge, then he went about it pretty good. But, you know, if you're like, maybe you shouldn't kill innocent people, well, that's the point this guy was trying to make, you know, is like, you know, hey, maybe you shouldn't be waging war by remote control, and not giving a shit about, collateral damage, you know, killing innocent civilians and such, when you're dropping a 500-pound bomb on a, you know, on a city block. So, you know, but I like when shows do that, especially, you know, when, you know, it's just like, it's a big-budget, crazy action piece. I always like when those kinds of shows throw this stuff out there, just to, like, just, you know, kind of, it's kind of like a Rorschach test for your morality, if you will. You know, and I like that kind of stuff, because it you know, it does make me think for a little bit about it, just like, you know, because, you know, I mean, not to get too far into it, but I've never been a huge fan of the whole drone stuff in the military. I mean, I understand completely and get why it's a useful tool, but I feel like, you know, I agree with the guy a little bit in that, you know, sometimes there's collateral damage, and sometimes it's a lot of collateral damage, and that is very unchill, to say the least, you know. So I just like stuff like that, because it makes me think, you know, it makes me actually stop and consider for a second, you know, the consequences of these kinds of things, which I find interesting, when watching, you know, a TV show or a movie. Especially, you know, something, like I said, that's this big-budget, crazy action thing, that, you know, used to be, you know, for a long time, you had this action thing, whether it's a movie or a TV show, and, like, you know, it, like, and you just turn your brain off, you know, like, that's a lot of the movies and TV shows that I grew up with, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, and it wasn't until, you know, maybe about, I'm gonna say, like, you know, like, maybe 10 years ago, give or take, that TV shows really started to, you know, turn the page and start putting interesting things in. Like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know, they have all these in the new, ever since they moved to NBC, they have all these episodes that are just crazy, man. Like, they have a episode with an active shooter, and, you know, Rosa is on the scene, and, you know, the rest of the squad are ordered to stay at the precinct and not go and help, and, you know, they're all freaking out about it, and, you know, stuff like that, you know, dealing with sexuality, dealing with this, and just, like, really heavy stuff, and I love it when shows will do that when you don't expect that kind of a thing from the type of show that it is, whether it's a comedy show or an action show or whatever, you know, but they throw in this crazy, awesome, high drama, and it's, you know, thought-provoking. It makes you consider stuff and just, like, question maybe your own pre-existing, you know, beliefs or morality about situations like that. So that's one of the things that I love about all three of these shows, and why I, you know, watch them week to week, and they're the only ones I really watch week to week, is just because they all do this. You know, they are all pretty intense action dramas that are also a little bit funny sometimes, and then they throw out these big questions, these big problems that society and the world faces as a whole, and it just makes them infinitely more interesting. So I'm gonna go with like an 8 out of 10 for season one, for season 3, episode 1 of SWAT. I'm going to go with a 9 out of 10 for SEAL Team Episode 1 Season 3, just because it's a two-parter, so I haven't gotten the full picture of it yet. And I'll go with, I'm going to go with a 9, actually no, I'm going to go with 8 for The Rookie, episode 1, season 2, just because I'm still pissed off that Afton Williams decided to leave the show, or, you know, like, felt like that she had to leave the show because she just was not being taken care of by, you know, and again, I'm not going to get into whether what I think about it, but that's apparently how she felt, and, you know, and I'm with her, man. Like, if you feel like you're not being supported and protected and feel safe in your working environment, then get out, you know. So it's just a huge bummer, you know. So I just knock a couple points off of that for, you know, because if those allegations are true, then that really, really makes me infuriated. But anyway, all very solid starts to the new seasons. Can't wait to see what we're coming up with next. So I'm really excited for tomorrow because The Rookie, episode 2 of season 2, will be on tomorrow night, and I'm super psyched. So just a reminder, The Rookie's on ABC on Sundays. SEAL Team and SWAT are on NBC on Wednesday nights. So check that stuff out. All right, that's going to do it for this pretty big content-packed episode. Thank you so much for listening. You know, I genuinely appreciate it. It really means a lot to me. Check out our other social media content at Mangami Players. And if you like this podcast, please check out our morning show, Morning Mangami, with host Heath Labombard. He's great. His show is great. So you'll really like that. It's actually pretty nice to listen to him in the morning and then me at night because we both have these that kind of, you know, morning and night vibe. Or you can listen to it whenever you want. You're a grown ass person. You don't have to follow the rules. But anyway, thanks again so much for listening. Check out Heath's show. Check out our other social media content because I am going to be starting to do a lot more streaming and other stuff across the different social medias. Since now I'm just going to be worrying about doing this weekly episodic review. It's not going to be quite so much work that I have to you know, so much like research or whatever, just like stuff I have to do for an episode. So it's just pretty simple. I can just sit down and watch these three episodes, just bing, bing, boom, and then just talk about it for 5, 10 minutes piece. So yeah, I'm gonna start getting into all that other good stuff. So check that out when it's coming down the pike, and if I know I'm gonna be doing something, I'll let you know about it on the weekly review. So anyway, thanks again one more time. Thanks again one more time. Thanks again. And we'll catch you next week for episode 2 of these three great series. Thank you again so much for listening. Good night.
The Nightcap with Jim podcast is a Mangami production, hosted by James Smith, produced by Heath Labombard and James Smith. For more Mangami content, visit Mangami Players all across the social medias.